Hello and welcome to episode 29 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. And this is a special episode because we have two special guests. Reza and I are sitting here with two lovely ladies, Mel. Hello, Mel.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah.
Y también estamos con Victoria, que no habla mucho inglés, entonces vamos a hacer este episodio en castellano y inglés juntos. Hola, Victoria.
Hola.
Bienvenido.
Gracias, thank you.
And Reza, hi Reza.
Hi Craig, how's it going?
It's going very well, it's going very well. So, Mel, where are you from originally? Can you speak a bit about yourself, where you're from and where you grew up?
Yeah, well, I was born in London.
Which part?
Near Reigate.
Okay.
And when I was four, my parents moved down to Herne Bay in Kent, which is a very beautiful part of the Garden of England. And I lived there until I was 18, by the seaside, and then went back to London to work. And then up to Nottingham and Manchester and different places, Nicaragua. And I'm now living in Spain, in Galicia.
Okay.
In a nutshell.
And Victoria, ¿de dónde eres tú? ¿Dónde naciste y qué es tu historia de juventud?
Pues nací en Orense, bueno, ahora es Ourense. Me fui a Santiago a estudiar químicas. Me vine a Barcelona a pasar unas vacaciones, me quedé. Y después vine a vivir en Valencia, unos 14 años aproximadamente.
¿Viviste en Valencia 14 años?
Sí.
¿Y qué hiciste aquí?
¿A nivel de trabajo?
Sí.
Pues, sobre todo bares, pero también...
¿Bebiendo o trabajando?
Soy española, 14, no inglés.
14 años bebiendo en los bares.
Trabajando, soportando a los que beben.
Vale.
Y después, pues, he retornado otra vez a Ourense, en un pueblecito, una aldea de 17 habitantes, cultivando la tierra, ecológica y, bueno, una pasada.
Y ahora vivéis ahí, ¿no?
Sí.
Muy bien.
Can I just ask you a bit more about the village there, Mel? Victoria was saying that you live in a very small village. How would you describe the village? What would be your description of it?
Well, first of all, it's not a village, it's a hamlet. It's okay. Smaller than a village. It's in the very deepest of Galicia, in a wine-growing area. The village is very typical of the Galician villages, stone houses. There's no bar or shop or anything there. It's just people living there. And everybody works the land. Everybody except Victoria and I have grapes. So they spend the time looking after the grapes and pruning them and doing the vendimia and things. So it's a very peaceful life, it's very quiet. We wake up to the birds singing, there's just no traffic at all. Every day a bread van comes and bangs his horn, beep, 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 and we go and buy bread.
Sounds lovely. So the money people make is from what they grow, and then they sell where, in the local market or something?
No, they sell them to local bodegas that make... Before, people made their own wine and sold it. But it's table wine, and people don't drink table wine anymore. So now it's only profitable, really, and just profitable. They sell it to the big bodegas on the River Minho. They take it down in trailers and tractors, and they pay them... Very little, but they pay them money. Most people in the village have worked or been in Switzerland. They went in the years of Franco. And so a lot of them have got a pension from Switzerland. So between that and the grapes there.
And but you work in the area as an English teacher?
Yeah, I do. I work in the capital city of the community of Ourense. And I go there each day and teach a few hours of English. It's very nice.
Mel, you mentioned before you went to Nicaragua. Can you speak a bit about your experiences in Nicaragua, why you went and what you experienced there?
Yeah, yes, I can. I was actually planning to go to emigrate to New Zealand and had shipped all my things in crates. But I fell in love with a Nicaraguan on New Year's Eve, 1989, and went over there on a visit and stayed for a year and a half.
And at that time, in 1989, what was it like there?
Well, the Sandinistas had just lost the election. I went in March 1990, and in February 1990, they lost the election to Violeta Chamorro and the the American-backed coalition.
Was it dangerous at that time to go?
No, not at all. In the years of the Sandinistas, it wasn't dangerous at all, apart from the North American war against the country and all the injustice that went with that. But no, it wasn't. It wasn't at all dangerous. It felt very safe, very, very, very relaxed and very easy. Very poor, but a very lovely sense of community and people working together, because they still had the 10 years of Sandinismo before the right wing began to take control and open Benetons and all the rich people came back from Miami, which I imagine is probably nowhere near as nice now.
Right.
Because they were the very rich and the very, very poor. But I mean, I went, being in love, I went there and stayed a year and a half as a housewife, and it was lovely.
So you were there for a year and a half?
Yes, yeah.
What do you remember about it?
Everything, really. One of the things that was... I suppose sticks in my mind a lot was the heat. It's 42 degrees, 43 every day. In the wet season it's wet and hot, and in the dry season it's dry.
So it was high humidity
in the wet season. Yes, everything's sticky and the clothes kind of smell musty, as if they've been in a plastic bag, slightly damp.
And I'm guessing no air conditioning.
No. And when I was there, the they have power cuts anyway. In each barrio, we had Tuesdays and Saturdays without light.
What's a power cut?
A power cut is when the supply of electricity that comes into houses is stopped at a central generator or whatever.
And that happened a lot, did it?
Well, because when I was there, it was the first Gulf War. And North America had kindly bought all the Venezuelan, Mexican... oil. So all the other countries and poorer countries were basically the tap was closed, so there was rationing. We were allowed so many litres a day for a car, so the electricity was off a lot. We had 2 days a week without water, so it went off at 6 in the morning and then it would come back on at 10 o'clock at night. So the day before you'd fill up buckets so you'd got enough to get by, and it's amazing how little you actually need, really. And one of the lovely things, biggest in the neighbourhood we lived in, they were all sort of, not prefabricated houses, but quite basic. And they were all linked. The walls didn't meet the ceiling. There was a kind of gap. So when there was a power cut, everything fell silent because the televisions went off, the radios went off. And it went quiet for a bit, and then people started arguing because there was no television to keep them. And then when the light came back on again, or the electricity came back on, there'd be this enormous cheer. The radio. And then all the televisions would come back on, the radios, the lights. And
life went back to normal.
And life went back to normal again. People stopped arguing.
It sounds like what you remember most, apart from the problems, the warmth of the people, the sense of community.
Yeah, now one of the things that for almost the first time in my life, I actually considered having children when I was there, because of the sense of community. In our road, it was a pedestrian little thing. I never really worked out whose children belonged to who.
Everybody looked after everybody else's kids.
And they'd come into the house, and they'd come into our house, can I have a glass of water, please? And they'd just sit there, you know. And in the end of the day, there was one street light, which was actually outside our house. So when the light was on, there was this, and one of the neighbours who lives opposite, a very fat, basically woman, a grandmother.
Fat, basically.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of a nice little euphemism there, but no, she was just really big, would sit on a rocking chair in the ending and tell stories, and the children would just come, about 30 or 40 from all the houses,
sit
cross-legged on the floor, and she'd just tell stories. And that I loved. And they'd go into her, if they were hungry, they'd go into her. Everybody had rice and beans always. And they'd go and eat, and I thought it was lovely.
Which part of Nicaragua did you live in?
In Managua, in the capital.
Is that the capital? Is it a big city?
It's a sprawling affair. I can't remember the population. But it goes for a lot. There's not any high-rise. Well, there was before the earthquake in the 80s. I think, and it's all small little makeshift houses, and it sprawls for a long, 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 long way. Yeah, and
very interesting.
How do most, or when you were there, how did most Nicaraguans earn a living? What did people do there? What kept the economy going?
Yes, that's a good question. There was in the city, there were the University of Central America, which employed a lot of people. There were the keeping animals. A lot of people were basically self-sufficient in a way. Lots of people sold mangoes and avocados in the street at the traffic lights.
And they had chickens, I suppose, and the old pig and goats and stuff.
Yeah. And quite agricultural. Coffee was a big...
I've heard of Nicaraguan coffee. It's supposed to be very good.
Did you see any...
Yeah, the stuff you drink there is disgusting, because all the nice stuff gets exported.
What
we get is the woof.
Yeah. Domestic market gets the rubbish.
Yeah.
Did you ever see any kind of drug trafficking or anything like that?
No, never. Because with the Sandinistas, it's interesting. It's like that drugs were really, really badly seen. Badly seen as Spanglers, isn't it? They were not approved of at all. So even if
mal visto.
Yeah. So you couldn't get, for example, you couldn't buy cigarette papers even if you were only going to smoke tobacco, because that was associated with drugs.
So there was no marijuana, no soft drugs, marijuana, hashish, and no...
Well, cocaine
coming up from the south.
No, it was so... In the 10 years of Sandinismo, it was considered to be a tool of the controlling classes to keep the masses tranquil and peaceful and not protesting. So it was seen as an oppressive thing and not liberating and not... to keep people in their place, vamos. So very, very little. I mean, once a friend did manage to find a little bit of dope, you know, what do you call it, Moroccan black or something. You know, those little hash. Sort of hash, that's it. And it was, oh my God, and it was the tiniest little thing and everybody was terribly excited, but it just, there wasn't a culture. And of drinking, neither.
Tell me, well, did you know any Spanish before you went there?
No.
Not at all. Did you learn a bit when you were there?
But nobody spoke English there, surely.
Nobody. So the first 2 months were a nightmare because I liked talking and...
using your hands a lot and smiling.
Smiling a lot.
Yeah.
But the problem was that people would be chatting, I'd be smiling and nodding. And then they'd all stop speaking. I'd think, damn, they've
asked
me
you a question. Yeah.
And but I employed a Spanish teacher. Well, I went to her house and paid her $10 an hour, and she gave me classes. So I improved a little bit, but in the house we spoke English. Mm. So it was a sort of rather poor Spanish to get by with. What's the bill? Kind of. I mean, I met a friend, and we had who was English but had lived in Sevilla, Bilbao. We went once a week to a bar to practice. Mm-hmm. So the first things I learnt were, how much is a bottle of rum, please? Have you got an ashtray?
A bottle of rum.
What's yes? You would buy a half or a bottle. Uh-huh. That was all there was, either beer or rum.
And now that you've spent many years living in Spain, can you think of any striking differences between the Spanish spoken in Nicaragua and in Spain?
Yes. One is the speed. Spanish people speak very quickly, relatively. In Nicaragua, it's very slow and very well articulated. So, vamos a la revolución. But it's really, what do you call, pasada. It's very, very slow. And when people from Solidarity, doctors and dentists came from Spain, people would be, ho, 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 because they just, ho, 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 and nobody could capture what they were saying. And in Spain, in Nicaragua, they don't have this, no se say, it's Barcelona, cinco. And of course, in the Spanish people go with a lot of lisping happening, and that was also...
Yeah, you said last time there was a name for that. Ceciando, you said.
Yes.
Ceciando or ceciando.
Ceciando.
Ceciando or ceciando.
Ceciando se llama.
Victoria, ¿qué hacen en Galicia? ¿Ceciando o ceciando?
Ceciando.
Is it cerveza or Galicia, cerveza?
Cerveza.
Cerveza.
Ceciando. Madrid.
¿Y hablas un poco de gallego?
Muy pequeño.
Poquillo, eso es gallego, ¿verdad?
Yes.
Porque a lo mejor algunos oyentes no saben que en Galicia tienen su propia lengua.
Sí.
Aparte de castellano, hay gente ahí que habla gallego también. Y creo que Craig, en Sudamérica mucha gente dice gallego para todos los españoles, ¿verdad?
Sí. Sí.
En Argentina, por ejemplo, dicen, es un gallego, quiere decir, es un español. Que no tiene que ser necesario.
Porque los gallegos viajan tanto, entonces las hay en todas las partes.
Porque hemos emigrado mucho.
Eso no sabía.
Dicen gallegos, creo que para todos los españoles. Gallegos.
Los vienes de Madrid, eres gallego.
Sí,
de cualquier lado.
Okay, moving on to the quick fire hot seat section of the podcast. I've got some quick questions I'd like to ask you. Tengo algunas preguntas muy cortitas que quiero preguntar. Okay. Y tenéis que decir lo que pensáis.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mel, what makes you happy?
What makes me happy? The countryside, the beach, the being outside.
Victoria, ¿qué te hace feliz?
La paz.
Reza?
Red wine and cheese.
You have to wait till after the podcast.
Ah, okay, after, okay.
Mel, what annoys you?
Oof, lots of things annoy me. I'm a very irritable woman, and I have to confess, it may be my hormones. Who knows? People eating with their mouth open annoys me. People sniffing. Doing anything repeatedly, noise type things. Sniffing is a particular irritation I have. And idiots, people who are stupid.
Just idiots in general.
They annoy a lot of people.
Yeah.
Victoria, ¿qué te molesta en general? ¿Qué cosas te pica?
La falta de respeto.
Falta de respeto.
La injusticia. Injustice. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of injustice in the world.
I agree.
Although it's an improving place, but there's a lot of work to be done still.
Mel, what one thing, if you were to tell people about yourself, would they find it difficult to believe?
God, couldn't be that profound, could you? What they'd find difficult to believe? I suppose now that I'm, if you like, an older woman, what surprises the young people I know is that I've climbed, I've travelled, and they, oh, really? Because they just see me as a sort of old woman, really, the same age as their mother. Apart from that, I can't think of anything really.
So you were so really, like, really active when you were younger?
Yeah, yes, I travelled a lot and climbed and some Southern Alps in New Zealand the GR20 in Corsica. So, yeah, I used to do lots and lots of sport and risk sports, they call it, whatever.
Okay.
Do you remember you took me in my first ever experience where I had to do abseiling?
Yes, he edited it earlier.
Oh, you scared the shit out of me. Oh, we might have to edit that clip. It was great.
Scared the heck out of you.
You scared the hell out of me. Well, yes, that was a great experience. Sierra de Bernia.
And afterwards we went to visit Craig's mum and dad in Moraes.
What a day. That was such a long day. That was such hard. I mean, for you it was a walk in the park, but for us, city plebs.
Yeah.
It was
hard. And it's interesting you say that, because when you do it all the time, you don't appreciate it. And I've often been told by people, you need to be more patient. Other people don't do all that, the climbing or the walking or whatever. So for what for me exactly was a skip, Reza was absolutely knackered.
He was behind me a lot of the time saying to me, how much further? When are we there? Aren't we there yet? How much further?
I have never sweated so much in my life.
It was hard.
Litres of sweat.
Yeah,
and that was the third or fourth time I'd done that. And for me it was a bit of a skip, really.
If you could change something about your character, Mel, what would you change?
I'd be less irritable. I am very...
Do you mean impatient?
Yes, and irritable. Well, impatient, okay.
But how do you mean irritable? Things bother you that maybe they shouldn't, or...?
Yes.
You get annoyed for the little things, silly things?
Yeah, repetitive little things. And for example, somebody sniffing a lot. Not that that's not directed at you, Reza, obviously. It shouldn't bother you.
I've just sniffed. I've got to blow my nose now.
I think a bit more patient, really. A bit more patient.
A bit more tolerant.
A bit more chill and relaxed. I'm very much like my mother and quite hyper.
But you seem very chilled. You seem very relaxed.
But you haven't lived with me, darling.
Laid back.
Well, in general I am, but I can also get quite annoyed about things fairly easily, which I tend to be doing yoga and meditation, try and keep a bit of a lid on that side of my character. But Victoria's nodding away.
Yes.
Do you meditate?
Well, I call it meditation. Other people may call it sleeping. I used to meditate when I was in Australia. I learned, and after I fell climbing, I broke a bone in my back and couldn't walk. So friends gave me books, and I lay out for 6 weeks. I couldn't walk, reading books about how to meditate and practice, and did it because it's very difficult.
Plus, you had nothing else to do,
so you could concentrate. Because I wanted to start doing that creative visualization stuff about how my back was fine, really. And I thought, well, why not?
Positive thinking.
Yeah, but initially I couldn't even count from 10 to 0 without going off on one about whether I should do this or do that or whether I should drink something. Very difficult. But I did manage to do it, and I continued. And I now have a siesta each day, which I love, and during which, in theory, I meditate. And I begin doing my breathing exercises, and after about 5 minutes or so, I'm asleep.
I'm curious, first of all, how long is your siesta?
As long as possible, Craig. really. When I go into work, I've only got time for half an hour or 40 minutes because it's more important to me to go swimming.
But don't you find if you sleep too much, it's really hard, you're drowsy and you're really, when you get up,
No. I never sleep deeply, not at night and certainly not on a siesta. So I'm always aware, I can hear the birds singing, I can hear Victoria doing things. It's not a profound sleep because I never ever sleep profoundly. So the same as in the morning, I wake up and I'm awake and I get up. I'm never dozy or drowsy or half asleep. I mean, I think as well, that kind of siesta, meditation, relaxation in the middle of the day, it's supposed to be very good for your concentration, memory. And upon the fact, I can feel quite boo in the morning. I've been doing things and I have lunch, I have my siesta, and then I just so chill and relax. And as well, I've read that, you know, some of the most intelligent, successful people in the world had a siesta, so I'm quietly confident.
But I've been doing it for a while, but it hasn't made me any more successful.
No, I'm living in hope.
Do you do anything of that sort?
I have a siesta from time to time.
But you just go to sleep, or?
Yeah. I think I do. I do a very... some people might say pointless thing. I quite often like to sit down and not sleep and just think about whatever comes into my mind. No internet, no telephone, no TV, no music. Just let thoughts come into my mind for half an hour.
But it's not trying to stop thoughts coming in
and
clearing.
None of that Buddhist stuff for me,
mind.
Thanks.
It's just accepting what comes in.
No, I'm not into that Buddhist-y kind of stuff, you know. I'm quite into the self. I'm into the self.
Okay.
I don't want to get rid of the self. That's one thing about Buddhism that doesn't attract me. I think the self's very important.
That's interesting.
And I don't really know much about Buddhism, but I understand that you have to get rid of the self. I say no, promote the self.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be a good Buddhist. No, that's my one criticism of Buddhism.
Victoria, ¿tú haces una siesta a mediodía?
No.
¿Por qué?
Nunca.
¿No es un costumbre en Galicia hacer una siesta?
No lo sé, pero es que a mí me sienta muy mal, porque me puedo quedar dormida profundamente y después me cuesta despertarme y me levanto atontada. Y entonces pierdo toda la tarde y me siento fatal.
Sí, sí.
Entonces no suelo dormir siesta.
¿Y si tú podías cambiar algo de tu carácter, qué cambiaría?
Mi carácter. Mi nerviosismo.
¿Cambiarías?
Thank you.
¿Eres muy nerviosa?
Mucho.
También
llego
lo mismo.
Él es impaciente.
No lo pareces.
Ya, porque trato de controlarlo. Pero cuando hay algo que se me... El otro día fui a un supermercado y no encontraba la cartera. Me puse histérica. Y estaba debajo de la compra. Pero, ay, ¿dónde está? Me pongo histérica. Entonces, por eso, donde vivo, es muy relajado, o sea, es muy tranquilo. Y en la ciudad, o sea, yo me pongo muy nerviosa. Coches, aunque Orense es muy pequeño, tiene 50.000 habitantes, o sea, casi pues, nada.
Menos mal que no vives aquí.
No, he vivido, por eso sé lo que es.
Mucho peor.
Sí, pero por eso estoy vivo donde vivo, porque soy muy nerviosa.
Bueno, yo creo que es la hora de comer.
Oh, genial.
Lovely, that sounds good. What's on the menu, Craig?
No idea. Let's go into the kitchen and see what's up. So, thank you very much, Victoria. Thank you very much, Mel, for being here. Thank you, Reza.
It's a pleasure as always, Craig.
Very nice to talk to you, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later, licensed by Creative Commons under a BYNC license at ccmixter.org. Si quieres mandarnos un comentario sobre este podcast o una pregunta sobre la gramática, la pronunciación o el vocabulario de inglés, mándanos un email a mansionteachers@yahoo.es.